Chargers did not blow the game tonight.
They didn't. The Chargers didn't charge. They tried to charge. They tried to charge it to their card, or whatever the pun here is. And it was declined, and they won the game.
They tried to throw the game away. Just Denver wouldn't let them do it. I think the best part of that game was when they had the Denver had the holding call in the end zone, and McCoy reacted like he had just won the Super Bowl to put San Diego up 21-3. He like ripped his headset off and like pumped his hands up in the air, and his face went beet red. And then on the punt, they fumbled the ball back to Denver. And then did you see it? Did you watch that last drive when Denver recovered the onside kick? He just had his face buried in his hands.
No, I didn't see any of that.
He was crouching on the ground, and he had his face buried in his hands. But the Chargers did not charge.
No, they did not charge it. I listened to that on the radio on my drive home from work, and it was like some Broncos radio station. And so like they were starting to like get their energy and get hyped during the fourth quarter when they were like making their little comeback. And then C.J. Anderson scored that touchdown, and they were like, yes! And then it was like called back on holding. And the guy was literally like, no! He was so upset.
Oh, C.J. He probably had like 12 points called back on holding calls.
Yeah.
Because that was like a 20-yard touchdown right there.
Yeah,
got called back 20-plus yards or something.
If I was a C.J. owner, I'm glad. I tried so hard to buy C.J. for like 2 weeks, and no one would do it. And I'm glad no one let me, because now I'm just like, I'm out on him. I'm like, nope, never mind. I'm done. I'm done with you, C.J.
Yeah, I mean, Devontae Booker looked good when he came in, because C.J. had some decent runs towards the end of the game, and then he was catching a bunch of passes. But if you look at his rushing line, it's only 10 for 37, so 3.7. But Booker, I mean, I think he was like 5 for 46 or something like that.
Yeah, he looked really good too.
He looked quick. He looked better. He has better bursts than Anderson. They're obviously trying to make a concerted effort to get Booker back in, or get into the game at least. So I don't know about C.J. Anderson, man.
It's worrisome if you're a C.J. Anderson owner. If you didn't already go out and get Booker like we recommended, then you're probably ruined at this point. It's too late. There's no going back.
Ruined. Season over. Just drop your team.
Yeah.
Better luck next year. All right. Well, it's week 6. We're going to hit you guys up with some sneaky starts. The sneakiest starts. So we're not going to give you the obvious starts. Players that are clearly going to eat this week, like Le'Veon Bell or Lamar Miller, or basically anyone who's on my fantasy roster playing against Leo this week.
Yeah.
They're all going to just 20-plus points, each and every one of them.
You're off to a good start with your 1.5 from Demaryius Thomas.
Hey, I'm trying to lull you into a false sense of security.
It's working.
You think you have this match locked up because DT dropped a dud on Thursday Night Football, but no, it's all part of the master plan.
Your only hope is that sometime between now and Sunday, I get in a car accident and end up in a coma, because right now I have my entire lineup bench except for Christine Michael and Stephon Diggs, who is on a bye. And if for some reason I can't set my lineup, then you'll win by default.
Yeah, maybe I'll just bribe the commissioner to lock your team.
Just lock me out of logging in and be like, sorry, bro, should have set your lineup.
Yeah, that's just child's play. That benching your whole lineup maneuver to get into your opponent's head.
Isn't yours the same? Isn't your whole lineup bench besides DT? Yeah, it is. So you're doing the same thing.
I did the same thing, though, but mine was more strategy-based because I'm trying to make a bunch of trades, and I don't want people to realize that I would never start these players anyways. So
that's a good
move. I just have my whole team on the bench.
I always, before I make any offer, I like take one of the guys I'm offering and I like flex them, or I put it in my starter spot and then I offer the trade just so like the person thinks that they're a starter, or I view them that way.
Just a small piece of trade strategy. It might not make any difference, but when they look at your roster, if they see that you're offering them a player you have on your bench, it might not go over so well unless they're really savvy.
I had someone say that to me. They were like, oh, you're going to try to trade me one of your bench players for one of my starters? And because they just looked at my team and saw they were on my bench. And I was like, ah, crap, never mind.
This is ruined. So you either put the players you want to trade into your starting lineup
for a
day or so, or bench your whole team so they have no idea who you're going to play.
That's the move, yeah.
Yeah, but we're going to talk about sneaky starts. So fringe starters this week are some really deep sleepers in terms of maybe you can go out and get these guys on the catatonic, yes. Go out and pick these guys up off the waiver wire and start them, plug them in if you're really desperate. or if you're going for that big boom play, maybe you need to make up some ground. The Thursday night football probably didn't put too many people in a hole. The last 2 weeks on Thursday night, we saw some players go off. We had David Johnson and Carlos Hyde and Larry Fitzgerald last week. So it's never a good feeling when you watch your opponent go up by like 30 or 40 points on Thursday night with one or two players playing. Because A.J. Green went off the previous Thursday night,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, he did.
So, I mean, that could change your roster decision where you veer away from playing the safe play, you know, the high floor, and then you just go for that boom. For I need broke. 20 points, so I'm going to play somebody like DeSean Jackson who Jamal can Charles. Put up 20 points. Or, yeah, or Spencer Ware, who's like, his floor is 25 points. So
I don't know. That's ridiculous. It's the absurd thing I've heard in my life.
But yeah, anyways, sneaky starts. Let's start out. I think we should go through the quarterbacks quickly because there are some really obvious streaming choices this week. We don't really need to spend too much time going through the quarterbacks. But I'm going to start with one of the really obvious ones, and that's Alex Smith against the Oakland Raiders pass defense, which has not been very good. It looked like they had turned a corner, but then last week against San Diego, they gave up big play after big play. Jack Del Rio came out and told the press that they needed to stop being Santa Claus on defense, is giving out presents. So it hasn't been good. And Alex Smith is coming off of a bye. Andy Reid is something like 15-2 coming off of a bye. So, you know, they've been game planning for Oakland for a while now. I mean, all the combinations, he has some ability to run the ball, so he can give you some extra points in that regard as well. They're getting Jamal Charles back, so theoretically their offense should be solid. So Alex Smith, I mean, there's not much really to say other than he has a great matchup.
Yeah, the only thing that veers me away from him is that it's on the road, and streaming on the road is always a little scary, but, you know, he's favored on the road, actually, which kind of helps that a little bit. And usually you like your streamers to be favored just because you want their team to be in a good position. That's why I like Alex Smith.
And another thing you can say is that the Raiders have a really good offense. So,
yeah.
The game will at least be competitive, but there could be points in the game where Alex Smith is trailing and the Chiefs are trailing. So they have to throw the ball a little bit. But I think it's going to be really tight. So at no point will they just be like, oh, we're just going to run the clock out. So
yeah, I think that's a good point. I like Alex. Another guy who's sort of probably the next guy, I don't know, we'll have to discuss order, is Marky Mark Mariota.
Marky Mark.
At home to Cleveland, who have been incredibly generous to the quarterback, the 29th to the quarterback when adjusted for schedule. We just saw him have a really good week against Miami. I don't think that's really quite on the table because it was mostly rushing. And his like yardage to touchdown ratio was kind of strange. It was only like 160 yards passing, but he threw 3 touchdowns. So that's probably not the most reproducible thing. But just by virtue of playing Cleveland, he has like probably a pretty high floor, I would say. I'd be surprised if he went out there and just had a total dud. Maybe his ceiling isn't the highest. Maybe they're able to ride DeMarco pretty efficiently, and he doesn't have to do that much. But we've also seen the Browns' offense has been capable of scoring. It's not like the Browns' offense is so inept that teams just immediately get way up and then that's it. You know, they pump the brakes. And the Titans' secondary is not good. They're bad. So it's possible the Browns are able to stay in this game. The Titans have to be, actually pushing the gas the whole way, and that helps Marcus Mariota a bit. So Mariota. And he's at home, which helps.
Definitely. I like Marky Mark there. And if you look at his schedule, his upcoming schedule, I mean, it's very, very tasty.
Yeah.
He plays Cleveland in week 6. He plays Indy at home in week 7. Jacksonville in week 8. Mm-hmm. All 3 games at home. Then he plays San Diego on the road in week 9, who does not have a good secondary, even though Denver wasn't able to take advantage tonight.
Right.
Then he gets Green Bay, who also has a weak secondary, and Indy, and then Chicago. So from week 6 to week 12, like, if Mariota comes out and shows that he's competent against Cleveland, you could potentially stream him for multiple weeks in a row.
Yeah.
the only thing with Mariota, you already mentioned it, is that they're a run-heavy team. There's a chance they just start pounding the rock. Even Derrick Henry looked very good against Miami. So it's always – a lot of these quarterbacks are in the same predicament, really. Because, I mean, if Kansas City gets a run game going, we'll take Alex Smith out of the equation a little bit. The next guy we're going to mention is Tyrod Taylor against San Francisco.
Yeah.
They're also a heavy running team. So, you know, these streamers with great matchups, but be wary of the trap here, especially with Tyrod Taylor, I feel.
Yeah.
Because the Buffalo Bills, they've been really good, and McCoy has been excellent at running the ball, especially in the past couple of weeks. San Francisco has not been good at stopping the run. They've been terrible, actually. Yeah. We saw what David Johnson just did to them last week. But, yeah, Tyrod Taylor, I mean, he's at home. It's an early game. These West Coast teams that have to fly all the way out to the East Coast or vice versa, when you're going coast to coast for an out-of-time zone game, we've seen teams really, really shit the bed. And actually, Arizona, when they flew out to Buffalo earlier this year, just embarrassed themselves, basically. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, San Francisco's not good. The opportunity should be there for Tyrod Taylor, and he does give you that rushing potential as well. If he ends up rushing for a touchdown, then you're probably set.
Yeah.
In terms of streamers. So how do you feel about Tyrod?
Yeah, I like Tyrod. It's, you know, yeah, basically what you were saying, it's a really good matchup. He's at home, but they're not just a bad secondary. They are a bad run defense. So they could go really run heavy. And Tyrod has also just been the least reliable of the three quarterbacks we've named so far. He's been, like, very up and down. But, you know, if both Smith and Mariota are gone, then Tyrod's probably the next logical choice. So I still like him. He's kind of like a high-ceiling, low-floor guy for me. I think his floor is lower than the other two. But his ceiling might be higher. I mean, you know, this is... We've seen Tyrod have these big games before, especially with, like, the rushing ability, so... I guess Tyrod's more of like if you're looking for the home run, then maybe you start Tyrod over the other guys. But, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess we probably should have started off by mentioning Dak Prescott.
Yeah.
I almost forgot about him for a second. I mean, I think he's almost getting to the range where he's not out of the streaming conversation yet, but more and more people are rostering Dak Prescott. So he may or may not be available on the waiver wire, but I think he still kind of is a streamer for this week. And Green Bay does not have a good secondary. He is going on the road.
Yeah, it's a bit
so worse. He has a couple of things going for him, though, and that's Green Bay has a really good run defense.
Yeah.
So if they're able to contain Zeke, I mean, Zeke is really good, though, so who knows. But if they are able to contain Zeke, then he'll be forced to throw the ball. It's sounding like he might get Dez Bryant back this week.
That tells, Yeah,
Dez has been practicing during the week. From all accounts, it sounds like he's moving around pretty well. So it seems like Dez will probably play. We'll know more after the Friday practice reports come out. But, yeah, Dak Prescott.
Yeah, I like the Dak call. I'm actually, you know, the... Green Bay kind of gets rated as, like, the number one run defense. But when you look at their schedule, I think it's kind of a mirage because they had T.J. Yeldon, who hasn't been good, then Adrian Peterson in the game he got hurt, then Theo Riddick, then their bye, and then Orleans Darkwood. They haven't really played, like, a healthy, legit running back. This is really their first test with Zeke behind a good offensive line, too. So for all we know, they aren't actually an elite run defense. They're just, like, a good one, which, you know, isn't enough to stop Zeke. We just saw him explode all over Cincinnati. So I guess that's
like a diaper.
Like a diaper. The bench stash logo can explode like a diaper.
There it is.
So maybe that's the one worry, but, you know, he just did that against Cincinnati last week, and Dak still had a nice little game in spite of it. So, and even if it is a good run defense, that's kind of the equation you want of a bad secondary, good run defense against a good offense, so where they're going to kind of be forced to throw. And, you know, maybe he doesn't have the most efficient game, but he probably still puts up at least decent numbers. Where would you rank Dak among the, I guess, now four guys we've named?
I would probably rank him second or third. Somewhere in there. I think I still like my favorite streamer this week is probably Mariota.
Yeah.
And then I probably put Alex Smith slightly ahead of Dak Prescott as well. But
yeah.
I mean, realistically, all three of those guys are almost interchangeable.
Yeah, I think that's true.
They could all end up with around the same point total, but I think they'll all be respectable. So, and then Tyrod slightly behind Dak. And then if you want a Hail Mary, you can go out and start Brian Hoyer against Jacksonville at home, who has looked surprisingly competent. He had a great connection with Cameron Meredith last week. Cameron Meredith seems to have absorbed Kevin White's targets. And Jordan Howard has kind of made Chicago's offense decent, right? He's given them that threat that they didn't have when they had Fat Jerry Langford back there getting his 1 to 2 yards
eating
a carry.
The deep dish.
Eating that. Well, now he has plenty of time to eat his deep dish. But yeah, Brian Hoyer, I mean, not like Jacksonville is a home run matchup, but
no,
they have been susceptible to giving up chunks of yardage in the passing game. I mean, we saw Andrew Luck kind of gash them a little bit in the last game before their bye. So yeah, Brian Hoyer, he's probably readily available in almost every league. So what do you think? How would you rank them 1 through 5 out of the guys we mentioned?
It's tough for me at the top. I think I probably agree with you that Mariota through Dak are like a 1A, B, and C. Like, they're kind of all on that same tier. I guess I'd go Mariota, Smith, Dak. That's probably fair, just because Dak being on the road in Green Bay kind of worries me. If that game was in Dallas, I might have Dak as number one. But going into Green Bay tends to be bad for opposing quarterbacks. And then Tyrod and then Hoyer is kind of like the Hail Mary. But Hoyer's been good this year. He hasn't thrown a pick yet. He's had over 300 yards in every game, 2 touchdowns in each game. But those have been against, like, such soft matchups. Like, Jacksonville is actually his hardest matchup so far. Not by a wide margin, but it's enough that we might see him regress a bit. But he's not a bad streamer if you're in a deep league where all the other guys are gone.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at his stats on Pro Football Focus, they've been releasing all their game grades. You know, he has the top QB rating, according to their metric, at 100.9. He does very well under pressure, where he sits top three in their accuracy under pressure metric. So, I mean, he hasn't looked bad whatsoever. And and the thing about Brian Hoyer is he hasn't really gotten Alshon Jeffrey involved. He's been doing this with his secondary receivers and Jordan Howard. And Zach Miller has looked really, really good in the past couple of weeks. So if he gets Alshon Jeffrey going, then, I mean, the offense is even more scary because Alshon has really not been doing much. He hasn't been getting the targets. He's a little bit banged up. And then they had that statement earlier this week where Hoyer came out and said that he wasn't going to try to feed Alshon Jeffrey the ball. But that sounds to me like it's almost reverse psychology. Like, they're just throwing that out to the press because they don't want the other team to, you know, hone in on Alshon more than they already are.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm not really going to try to force him the ball. So, yes, I am. I'm going to try to force him. Because whenever you come out and say, like, oh, I'm going to feed him, you know, what does that do to the other team's
scheme for it?
Psychology. Yeah. They're like, oh, I mean, it's all this. You can't really pay too much attention to what coaches or teams are saying before the week because it's all mind game bullshit. So anyways, that pretty much caps it off for the quarterbacks. Let's jump into our running back pool. Who's the first running back you want to talk about?
I think we both agree the first running back is Giovanni Bernard of the Cincinnati Bengals.
Giovanni Bernard.
Yeah, he's appeared on this list. I think it's probably his third time on this list so far. He gets New England, which are a good run defense, which is in his favor, to sort of paint the picture. They are number 4 against the running back in standard scoring, but 13th against the running back in PPR, which is kind of what, you know, Gio's the pass catcher. That's his specialty.
Exactly.
And this is also a game where New England is heavily favored. So that is also helps Gio. If you look historically in games where Cincinnati is at a disadvantage, they tend to lean on Gio more because they're behind. They have to throw to catch up. And so that the game script and everything points to this being a Geo game, not as much of a Hill game.
Yeah.
So it's just banking on that, really.
Yeah, and I mean, we saw Hill get banged up, barely played in last week's game in Dallas.
Yeah.
So there's a chance that he's not fully healthy. I mean, he's been practicing this week. Yeah. But early in the week, he had like a sling on his arm. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of concern about that, but he's been managing to practice. So he might not get a full workload as it is, but disregarding yeah. that, you, just everything that you mentioned, it seems to be setting up perfectly for a Geo game. New England, I mean, they're mad. They have Tom Brady back. They're at home. It's Tom Brady's first game at home. Cincinnati's going to have a tough game ahead of them, and there's a chance that they'll be trailing, probably a pretty solid chance that they're behind in the game, and New England is more susceptible to giving up points. I think that statistic shows you the typical game flow of a New England Patriot game so far this year, whereas if they get ahead, so the other team kind of abandons the run a little bit. The only game where that didn't really happen was when they lost to Buffalo, and McCoy had a good game against them. But otherwise, they've been pretty much leading big in a lot of these games, so the other team can't run their starting running back. They have to bring in their pass-catching back, who will soak up all the targets, soak up the touches, and that's going to be Geo this week.
Yeah.
So Geo, he's always one of those guys where you're like on the borderline, like, should I start him? This week, I think you should, as a flex, Geo Bernard.
I like it. Next up on the backs, either of the Raiders running backs, DeAndre Washington or Jalen Richard. Richard was better last week, so maybe you lean his way, but even if he's taken, DeAndre is still a decent start because Latavius looking like he's going to be out another week, and they're at home to the Chiefs, who are actually haven't been very good against the run this year. They're 28th to the running back.
Yeah, that's surprising. But yeah,
they're usually pretty good, but this year something's changed. I don't know why the lack of Justin Houston would suddenly mean they don't have a good run defense. Maybe that's been it. I don't know.
I mean, we'll have to see how they look coming out of the bye.
Yeah, that might change things.
But yeah, we also need to put a little asterisk on this too. We still haven't heard the week or the Friday practice reports. Now, if Latavius Murray comes out and practices tomorrow, then this might all go away.
Yeah, then you don't want to start either.
If it sounds like Latavius Murray's going to play, I don't think he will. I think he might try to practice in limited fashion, and then he might get a questionable tag. But I don't think he's going to play this week. Either one of those guys is probably an okay start. The only thing with those two is they kind of cannibalize each other. So in the last week, it was Richard who had the most production, but DeAndre Washington saw more snaps.
Yeah,
I think it was 37-23. So he outsnapped Jalen Richard by a bit, but Jalen Richard looked better with the touches he did get. So, I mean, if you're in a rough spot, running back two or flex, then matchup-wise at home against Kansas City, I think I would be okay putting one of those guys in. I would personally put in Richard just from watching the Raiders. He's looked like the better running back so far this year. They're getting him involved in the passing downs as well. So that is my personal take on that. So, yeah, the Raiders backfield.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good to me. The next running back up is one James White of the New England Patriots. This is really based off of what we saw last week, how much more involved he was with Brady back. Before that, he'd been averaging 25-30% of snaps, and Brady comes back, and that jumps up to 50% of snaps. And they throw a lot more with Brady. It seems almost like the Patriots, like, oh, we have Brady back now, we're going to just be this pass-heavy team just to prove that we can. And so this kind of sets up to be that with James White. He's the pass-catching back. Blunt wasn't particularly good last week. And the Cincinnati offense, they have these dud games, so you never know when one's coming. But assuming that this isn't one of those games, they should be able to stay in it enough that the Patriots are still trying to score. Also, I mean, the Patriots seem to try to score no matter what, even when they're embarrassing someone. So
yeah, I mean, that's the thing with the Patriots. You might be thinking, well, you just told us to start Geo because the game script is going to favor the Patriots. But look at what happened last week against Cleveland. They were up the entire game. They were up by chunks, but White was still the more, I mean, Blunt had a touchdown, but if you're talking about, you take the touchdown away, the efficiency numbers favor White, who rushed five times for 26 yards and had four receptions for 63 yards.
Yeah.
So he had about 9 points in standard leagues, even more in PPR leagues. So I think White is going to see the field more. Even if they're up, they like to throw the ball to their running back out in the flat, get him to move his legs and push the ball up the field. James White is that guy right now. No news really on Deion Lewis when he is going to come back. So I like White as a spot start this week.
Yeah, he should be. He could be out on a lot of waiver wires, so probably a guy you could recently just pick up and throw in.
Definitely.
The format and depth. Last running back, unless you have one more I'm not thinking of, is Bobby Rainey of the New York Giants.
This is deep right here.
This is the deep one. This is why he's last, and, you know, the real dart throw, and it's just that Baltimore has one of the best run defenses in the league, maybe the best. Rainey is the pass-catching back in absence of Shane Vereen. Since Shane Vereen's injury, he has 7 receptions and then 6 receptions in the last 2 games. And he's done well with them, 43 and 52 receiving yards. So if the Giants choose to lean on him more and he starts getting heavily utilized, you know, he could end up with 50 to, you know, 60 receiving yards. He gets a little bit of a run too, so even if he puts together like 20 rushing yards, maybe he gets a touchdown. That quickly turns into 90 yards and a touchdown, which is, you know, very good from a sneaky start.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they're the second best run defense in terms of fantasy production. Green Bay is technically slightly ahead, only giving up 9.5 points to the running back is Green Bay, but Baltimore is only giving up 12 points to the running back.
Right.
So Baltimore's been very good. It should be interesting to watch Baltimore's offense, actually. They've just changed up offense coordinators. So we'll see how that goes. But I do like that with just the whole narrative that they've been pretty much shutting down the early down back.
Yeah.
And Bobby Rainey. Rashard Jennings is still banged up. He's probably going to play this week, but who knows how effective he'll be. So yeah. Bobby Rainey looked surprisingly competent in the game against Green Bay last week. So
yeah.
I like Bobby Rainey as, like, if you're really, really desperate.
Yeah.
And there are probably teams out there. I mean, we're starting to get into these bye week massacres where you're kind of have to shuffle your lineup around a little bit. Bobby Rainey could be, I mean, if you're dealing with injuries and byes, throw in Bobby Rainey. He could probably get you at least, you know, a decent floor to save that position in your lineup.
At least 20 fantasy points, I think, is, like, really safe to say.
I was going to say that his floor is probably 30.
30? Okay, sure.
Points.
Why not? That's not a problem.
With a ceiling of 20.
A floor of 30 and a ceiling of 20. Sure.
Because, you know, that's just how it works in fantasy football.
Because it's an upside-down world where Bobby Rainey is playing well.
Boom. An upside-down world.
Do you have any other running backs, or should we move into the wide receivers?
I think we're going to be heavy on wide receiver this week.
Yeah.
We'll end it with 4 running backs.
Yeah.
There are a lot of really obvious running back starts this week.
Right.
As far as the sneaky ones go, I mean, you can look at some of the guys like Bilal Powell if you're really, really desperate, going on the road against Arizona, prime time. Arizona needs to win. They get out, they get Carson Palmer back in that game. If they're leading, then the Jets are going to be forced to throw the ball. And Bilal Powell is their pass catching back. I mean, Arizona's been pretty decent. They're 20th, I guess. I mean, the 20th hardest matchup.
Mm-hmm.
So that'd be, I mean, the top half in terms of rush defenses. So Bilal Powell's another option there. But looking at the schedule, that's probably the extent.
Yeah.
Of the sneaky start running backs?
The problem is that these sneaky starts, you know, they can run away with the job and then they're not sneaky anymore. Like, Christine Michael was a sneaky start. Now he's obvious. Jordan Howard was a sneaky start. Now he's obvious. Spencer Ware. Like, these guys just kind of become like, if you own them, you're probably starting them. It's not really sneaky anymore.
Yeah. So we're kind of giving you guys some more obscure starts.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, say you have Rainey and Jennings and you are excited that Jennings is coming back this week, what we're telling you is it might be smarter to start Rainey over Jennings just because of the way the Baltimore rush defense has kind of they've held strong. But let's move into the wide receivers.
The wide receivers. Who you got?
Wide receivers. We're going to start with our boy because we've been pumping him for so long.
Have we? Okay.
John Brown.
Ooh.
Johnny Smokey. Brown.
Smokey Brown.
Smokey, smoke, smokey. If you guys have John Brown, he's probably been on your bench the entire season. Right. Yeah. Well, maybe you started him in week one, hoping for, like, production right away, then you benched him. So this is a week to unleash your John Browns. Just let him rip, let him fly. We talked about this already in our buys and sells video segment when we're talking about buying John Brown. The matchup this week is really, really tasty. Really, really tasty against the Jets that are just getting just sliced and diced by these deep threat wide receivers. And John Brown is the number one outside wide receiver on Arizona right now. Carson Palmer should be back, which will help his stock because we saw them right before Palmer got injured. Brown had 11 targets in Buffalo, and then he had 16 targets against LA. So Palmer was making a concerted effort to feed him the ball.
Yeah.
And then Stanton came out on last Thursday night, found a safety blanket in Fitzgerald. But this week with Palmer back, I think he's going to work the Jets secondary with John Brown. I think you can see him get another 10-plus. Another 10-plus targets from Johnny Smokey.
Johnny Smokey, yeah, I'm with you. This is like I feel like this is the breakout week we've been waiting for with John Brown. The matchup is there. Palmer should be coming back. Like everything, the stars are aligning for John Brown to have the monstrous game that he was drafted to have. So
now's the time to John fire Browns. Him up.
Yeah.
Do it. Fire him up. Yeah, wide receiver two, flex, whatever it is. Start John Brown this week.
Quarterback, wherever you got to put him, just put him in.
Yeah, he's going to get the whole Terrell Pryor treatment. He's going to be a running back. He's going to be a wide receiver, a quarterback. John Brown can do it all.
He can do it all.
Who's your next wide receiver?
I'm trying to decide who to throw out next because it just is kind of a quagmire. But I'm going to throw out I feel like I have to throw him out just because he's my boy. You're throwing out your boy. I'm going to throw out my boy. Tyler Lockett. Here it
comes. Tyler Lockett, another person we were just talking about in our last video segment.
Yeah, what I mentioned, before this video is the story is he, started out well, was getting lots of snaps, then gets hurt, middle of week two, was hobbled all through week three and four with a partially torn PCL. But now he's healthy, off the bye week, practicing in full. Pete Carroll came out and said, yeah, we can get him back involved. He's going to be, a major part of the offense. And the matchup is there with Atlanta. Outside of Trufant, everyone else on Atlanta has been getting absolutely burnt. So the question is, do you think Trufant is shadowing Tyler Lockett? I think the answer is no. He'll see some of him on the outside, but so will Jermaine Kearse and Paul Richardson and whenever Doug Baldwin is on the outside. And Lockett only plays in like 3 and 4 wide receiver sets to begin with. So whenever he's on the field, it's sort of like a coin flip on if he's going to get Trufant or not. Maybe if he sort of blows up and have a couple big plays, they stick Trufant on him, and then that's the last we hear out of Tyler Lockett. But, that's why he's a sneaky start, and he's a big play threat. So even if he only has a couple big plays before he disappears, if they're both, 40-plus yard catches, then you're already happy with that. So this is the dart throw on sort of the talent on what he was drafted at, that now that he's healthy and now that the offense is clicking, we saw this before they went in the bye week, but especially coming out of the bye week at home to Atlanta, this should be the kind of really first nuclear Seattle game we see this year. We saw it a little bit against San Francisco, but that doesn't really count. This should be a good game for that offense, and Tyler Lockett looks to be involved. It's definitely risky because, he hasn't been involved while he was injured. Maybe they've sort of moved on to the other pieces more. But if you have him in your thin at wide receiver, I think he's worth the dart throw out of anyone else.
Yeah, I mean, if those 2 40-yard catches are touchdowns,
then you're set. Boom.
Then you're fine. You could have nobody else play on your team. Lockett.
There's no stat that I've seen for this, but as someone that watches all the Seattle games, I can say from the eye test that whenever the plays break down and Russell Wilson is like scrambling for his life to find someone, a majority of the time it's Lockett is the one who like wills himself open and ends up being that like last second safety valve. It's not it's not Jimmy Graham. Usually Doug Baldwin ends up, heavily covered by this point once the play is broken down because defenders are like, oh, wait, oh, no, this is going on forever. Quick, get on Baldwin. And so Lockett kind of ends up this odd man out. And so if that happens throughout this game, that is beneficial to Lockett.
Yeah. I mean, the good old eye test metric.
The eye test metric. That's just what you get.
By my eye test metric, Spencer Ware is better than Jamal Charles.
Well, we don't need to do that right now. We don't need to ruin this episode for everyone. So yeah, who else you got?
I'm going to throw out a little bit of a sneaky one here. Oh, but it shouldn't be that surprising if you had been watching the Saints the past couple of weeks. But that's Michael A. Thomas of the New Orleans Saints going against a Carolina secondary that has not been very good. I mean, they've been about middle of the pack, but they have shown kind of a weakness. Everyone's going to point to that Julio Jones game, right, in Atlanta. Right. But even outside of that, we saw Mike Evans have a really good game against him last week. They're going into New Orleans. Now, Michael Thomas quietly, I know people are going to point to the Snead injury, but he's quietly second on the team in targets with 30. The only one who's ahead of him is Brandon Cooks with 33. Mm-hmm. So he's only three targets behind Cooks, who is like the number one, or everyone assumes is the number one in that offense, right? But take a look at this. In the red zone, Michael Thomas leads the team in targets with five.
Ooh.
He has five red zone targets. Ooh. He's converted on two of them. So two touchdowns. Each of the last 2 weeks he scored. It seems like he's found a rapport with Drew Brees. And this is what we were hearing in training camp and in preseason, was that Thomas was the one who was making plays. He was the one who was wowing the coaches. And if he's kind of past that rookie learning curve a little bit, you know, he's got his feet wet. He made some plays in the first couple weeks, but it wasn't anything explosive. And then in the last couple weeks before their bye, he started to become a legitimate red zone threat. Now, it's a sneaky start, because if Snead is healthy, then Snead will kind of eat into his workload a little bit.
Right.
But I still think that I'm going to go out and say that by the end of the year, Michael Thomas might be right around where Brandon Cooks is in terms of production.
Ooh, that's a fiery hot take. I don't hate it, though. He could turn into, you know, what Marcus Colson was during his prime. It's definitely a possibility. And that has proven to be the sort of security blanket of Drew Brees in the past. So I like that. I like that call.
Yeah, I mean, and the matchup this week is good for Michael Thomas. You know that they're going to have to stop Brandon Cooks. And it's a home game, so Drew Brees is going to be out there slinging it. Thomas slinging is going to have his fair share of targets. So Michael Thomas is my start of the week.
I like it. I like it. I'm going to throw out another guy here. This is someone I hyped towards the end of preseason, first for bad reasons, and then as the season has gone on, it has been supported. Kenny Britt.
There it is.
Kenny Britt, who has, like, very quietly actually had, like, a pretty high floor. He's averaging 70 receiving yards a game on seven targets, and his yards per catch is around 15. So he's kind of being used as this, like, slightly, you know, down the field for the Rams, because they don't throw it deep. So, like, the Rams version of a deep threat. And he's getting, you know, pretty good targets for that offense. The yardage is there. He just hasn't had the touchdown. He's basically a touchdown away from people being like, oh, wait, who's Kenny Britt? What's going on here? You know, that's all that's keeping him from that double digit, like, wide receiver 2 week.
So you know what he needs?
What does he need?
He needs Jared Goff.
He needs Jared Goff. We saw in Hard Knocks all those, like, fades to Kenny Britt. Oh, my God, he needs Goff for that. And maybe this is the week we get Goff, with how truly awful Case Keenum was last week. Maybe finally Goff gets trotted out. when you know, the Lions have already just eviscerated them by halftime, like, you know what, let's throw out this Goff kid, see what he's got. And then Britt just gets peppered with targets in the red zone, and that's what's going to happen. And Detroit is bad against the pass, 26th to the wide receiver in fantasy points, which is very favorable for one Kenny Britt. So yeah, this is, you know, another dart throw, but probably a higher floor than Tyler Lockett, a much lower ceiling. But he's a nice guy to flex if you're just like, you know, I just need like 7 to 10 points for my flex. I just need to know I'm probably going to get that, because that's what Kenny Britt has kind of been all year.
Yeah, I mean, and if they roll Jared out, see what they goff.
And what they goff is a wide receiver one with that 30 fantasy point floor.
We're getting deep. Really deep here. Yeah. Let's just continue with that trend. Right. I'm going to go deep, and go Breshad Perriman of the Baltimore Football Ravens.
Oh, the Football Ravens. Okay.
Football Ravens. And it's just shaping up to be out of necessity. Mm. But, I mean, he's like this athletic freak type of wide receiver. He was highly touted didn't step on the field last year. So this is his more or less his rookie season. Mm-hmm. He hasn't really been involved that much. But this week, look at how things are shaping up for him. Steve Smith is probably out.
Yeah.
Mike Wallace has been wearing a non-contact jersey all week. So he might be out. So you might be dealing with a 1-2 combination of Kamar Aiken and Breshad Perriman. If you saw Joe Flacco during the post game last week after they lost to Washington, he was not happy. I think you could see that he wants to operate in a different manner in terms of offense. And what did they do? They went out and they fired Tressman, and now they're dealing with Marty Morinweg, who has been known to really push the ball down the field. Well, if Mike Wallace isn't playing and their aim is to start spreading the field, taking these deep shots, then Perriman is kind of the guy. And he's going to have an opportunity this week, I think, to show why they drafted him when they did. Mm-hmm. It's deep. I mean, you would have to be – this is kind of like – it aligns with our Terrell Pryor call a couple weeks ago. It's like a desperation play, a boom or bust, where he has a high ceiling in this game, but he has like a goose egg floor. He could potentially go out and put up a goose egg.
Yeah.
But I kind of like the potential. I went out and picked him up in one of our leagues just because I want to see what he does this week, because they're still looking for somebody to kind of establish themselves in Baltimore. I mean, I guess Steve Smith has kind of been the guy, but I mean, Aikens had a bad year. Mike Wallace he's kind of fallen off a little bit in the last couple of weeks, and he's Mike Wallace, you know. But they went out and they drafted this kid, and they want to see production out of him, and now's the time. So Breshad Perriman is another sneaky start.
Yeah, I like it. That's definitely the high upside one, because he is that, like, physical freak combination of, like, size and speed that, like, can break a big play at any point, you know, when he's
like healthy. Sammy Coates.
Like Sammy Coates. He can be this week Sammy Coates, I guess.
He will be this week Sammy Coates. Without all the drops.
There'll be some of the drops. There'll definitely be some of the drops.
Right. So who's our next wide receiver seeing start on your list?
The next guy I'm gonna throw out. I threw him out last week as the sort of last second
I'm gonna catch it.
Terrell Pryor play of the week, and it ended up working out. So I'm gonna throw him out again. Because it was a big week, but not like Sammy Coates big, to where it was like he's no longer sneaky. That's Chris Hogan.
Hey, brother.
Last week, he had 5 targets, caught 4 of them for 114 yards. He was like the de facto deep threat. And it was going really well until, you know, he got hurt. But all signs are that he's, you know, he's going to be fine. He's going to play this week. And assuming that he does, he's, you know, the wide receiver too in a Tom Brady prolific passing offense. And so there's value to that. I mean, he's definitely boom or bust because he's being used completely as a deep threat. The short stuff is Edelman. Middle of the field is the best tight end in the history of the game. And then Gronk. Get it, Martellus Bennett. and then so Chris Hogan is that.
I think the people got it.
There it is. Yeah, is that deep guy. And so he's, you know, so these are all boom or bust guys we're naming at a certain point, besides Kenny Britt, who's just like the safest wide receiver in the league. So Hogan, he's on a good offense. You know, he's owned in all the leagues probably. You can't just go pick him up like a lot of these guys. But if you did pick him up, you're like, oh, you know, 11 points is pretty good. I don't know if I'm ready. He's probably a better start than someone you're trotting out just because you draft them and you're used to doing it.
Yeah, I like it. I like a little Hogan. He seems to have that connection with Tom Brady, and that's a scary thing. I mean, we saw it last year with Edelman. Edelman's a little bit hobbled up right now. He's got that bad ankle, so who knows how involved he'll be, but maybe Hogan's a new Edelman.
Sure, why not?
Sure, why not? Let's just throw it out there. All in, wide receiver one in the elite New England passing offense.
Yep, there it is. All right, who else you got?
All right, do you have any other wide receivers you want to toss out?
We should probably throw out the Bears wide receivers, Eddie Royal and Cameron Meredith, the most targeted wide receivers on the Bears in the last 2 weeks, you know, more than Alshon Jeffery. Kevin White went down and then did not go to Alshon Jeffery. It went to Eddie Royal and Cameron Meredith. So assuming that keeps up, there's definitely value against Jacksonville.
Yeah, and actually Eddie Royal is a slot receiver. Mm-hmm. He kind of had a down week last week, so a lot of people might be little bit wary of Eddie Royal. A lot of the production went to Meredith last week, but I think Eddie Royal is probably the safer of the two this week because Jacksonville's slot cornerback is Devon House, and he has not been faring very well this season. He's negatively graded on Pro Football Focus. So Eddie Royal should have the better matchup there in terms of facing their slot cornerback. And we know that Hoyer likes to throw the ball to Eddie Royal. It's that whole wide receiver two. Because, I mean, I guess technically Eddie Royal is the wide receiver two behind Alshon Jeffrey. We saw Meredith kind of have his coming out party, but I think Eddie Royal is going to be that outside of Alshon, and who knows what's going on with Alshon, man. He's not even leading his team in targets. What is he like? He was third on his team in targets last week or something like that. So Eddie Royal, he gives you kind of that yards after the catch boost because he likes to catch the ball and run, and then he's their punt returner as well. He's already scored a touchdown this year, so not that that should be any reason to start him, but, you know, you might have an extra little bit of production if he does take one to the house.
I like it. We'll throw out one last wide receiver here. Quincy Enunwa, owned, you know, everywhere at this point, at least he should be. And he's, you know, now the de facto number two there with Eric Decker out. The owners might feel a little burned because he's been the number two already the last couple weeks and hasn't done that much with it. But, you know, he faced Seattle, which is just a bad place to be. And then Pittsburgh, who have actually been pretty good against the wide receiver. They rank 13th in fantasy points allowed. But then this week they get Arizona, who, despite, you know, the big brand name, have not been very good this year. They're 27th in fantasy points allowed to the wide receiver. And Brandon Marshall probably sees Patrick Peterson this game. So that kind of leaves Enunwa as the more of the chain mover.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, the same type of wide receiver last week, Jeremy Curley, had a big game against Arizona.
Definitely.
I mean, I'm not saying they're the same wide receiver, but Enunwa kind of operates as that.
Yeah, the, like, slot possession guy. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so that's...
Yeah.
If you own Enunwa, he's probably worth starting as a... Probably not a super high ceiling, but a high floor guy, which is still nice to have.
I like it. I like it a lot.
Excellent. Tight ends.
Throw out a few tight ends here to close off the sneaky start segment. We don't want it to run too long.
Nope.
The first guy I have on our list is Charles Clay of the Buffalo Billsies.
Oh, okay.
And Clay is going up against San Francisco.
Yeah.
I mean, we can end the segment right there. He's going against San Francisco. and he was heavily targeted last week, actually. Clay seemed like legit. He went over 70 yards against the Rams. Yeah, the Rams last week. And San Francisco, I mean, they're not the worst team in the league against the tight end, but they're also not very good.
Yeah.
They're, you know, a middle of the pack. But the thing is, San Francisco defense is just, I mean, you kind of want to take advantage wherever you can against San Francisco. So Charles Clay, the thing that attracts me about Charles Clay is that he's kind of found this niche as being Tyrod Taylor's safety blanket in the past couple of weeks. And think about the Bills situation. They have no Sammy Watkins. They might have the worst wide receiver situation in the league, which is saying a lot, considering
really
that there's a team like the Rams out there. But the Rams have Kenny Britt.
They got Kenny Britt.
Automatically, you have to rank them above the Bills. But the Bills are trotting out, you know, bottom of the barrel wide receivers.
Yeah.
But Charles Clay, he's always kind of been one of those athletically gifted tight ends. He struggled with injuries, but he seems to be healthy now, and Tyrod Taylor's leaning on him. So go ahead and stream. Stream Charles Clay.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah, he's second on the team in targets on the season, which, you know, it makes him pretty valuable in this very nice matchup. The next guy I'll throw out is a Jesse James against Miami. Also, don't really need to say that much. Just an awful, awful secondary. They're not the worst against the tight end. They're about the same range as San Francisco, 20th in fantasy points allowed. But, you know, this is the Steelers' offense is so good that any piece of it just has some value. You know, Jesse James doesn't see a ton of targets or get a lot of yardage, but he's as good of a bet for a touchdown in the red zone than any of the receiving corps because he's just the biggest guy there. So he is, you know, at a certain point, pretty much all of the tight ends are you're hoping for a touchdown. Clay is more of the, like, he's going to get you some yardage. Probably doesn't get you a touchdown, but he's at least, like, there's some good yardage floor there. Jesse James is, like, touchdown or bust, but he's just, he's in such a good offense and such a good matchup that his chances for a touchdown seem a bit higher.
Yeah, I mean, Jesse James, he has 5 red zone targets. He had 9 targets last week against the Jets. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he's being heavily utilized in that offense. And that's what you're looking for, touchdown. And he is, like you said, he has a high percentage chance, or at least equal as the other tight ends that you'd be picking up off the waiver wire stream. In terms of getting a touchdown. Waiver wire stream.
Who else you got?
James, Clay. I only had 2 on my list.
All right. I'll throw out, I have a couple more. I'll start with Richie Rich Rogers of the Green Bay Packums. That's very clear who it is, right? Didn't really work out last week, but, you know, he's at home again. It's the exact same situation. He gets Dallas, who are 29th against the tight end. So it's just like rinse and repeat, try again, hope for better results. Again, he's, you know, kind of a touchdown or bust guy. Gets decent amount of targets. You know, there's not much else to say about that.
Yeah, I mean, we'll probably be pumping him a lot just because the phenom Jared Cook is out for the foreseeable future. So he is the pass catching tight end in Green Bay right now. So, Richie Rich Rogers.
What'd
you just call him?
Richie Rich Rogers.
Of the Green Bay Packums. Okay, yeah. I'll just go with that.
Next is CJ Uzoma. CJ Zima. Of the Cincinnati.
Just hoping that Cincinnati becomes more efficient in the red zone because they've been god-awful.
That's like, you know, we're really getting into like the bottom of the barrel here. This is, again, just a touchdown bet. New England has quietly been bad against the tight end, 28th to the tight end. It seems to be a weak spot in their defense. You kind of expect...
Barnage looked decent last week.
Barnage looked decent, and, you know...
And then they... Hamlet, I think, scored a touchdown. Whoever that is. I was watching that play. I was somebody. Like, who is Hamlet?
Some guy off the street, some fan they let put on a jersey. I don't know.
Not to be. To score or not to score.
And, you know, New England, historically, they seem to scheme to take away the number one wide receiver, so this could be quiet. AJ Green week, unfortunately. And so other than that, it's like, you know, Brandon LaFell and CJ Uzoma. And you know, we saw the LaFell week last week, so maybe New England chooses to respect him a little bit. And that just kind of leaves Uzoma and Gio Bernard as, like, the pass catchers. So it's just the... It's a decent matchup, and yet just hope for the best with Zima.
Yeah, I mean, it's sounding like Eifert's not going to play again this week.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a slight chance if he comes out and practices tomorrow. But, yeah, I mean, you know, it's been a focal point of their practices. They need to put the ball in the end zone when they get to the red zone. And last week they were blown out of the water. The week before against Miami, they really couldn't do anything in the red zone, and they let Miami hang around the game. So they're sorely missing the presence of a big body that can catch the ball in the end zone. AJ Green hasn't been that guy, so they need somebody, and right now it's CJ Uzoma. Will probably be Tyler Eifert soon. Hopefully, you're crossing your fingers if you have Tyler Eifert stashed on your bench.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's probably good for tight ends.
I think so. I think that's probably good for sneaky starts.
Sneaky starts and pineapple tarts. Colin, this shaking your head before I even finish that.
I already, as soon as I heard the pod, I'm like, oh boy, here we go, here it is.
Here we go, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I could have gone a lot of different ways with that, but
could have
I kept
been
it clean.
As bad as Richie Rich of the Packums. It could have been on that level.
I don't know. That was pretty legit. You know, I think we should blow that up on Twitter right now.
Boom! There it is.
Go start Richie Rich of the Green Bay Packums.
Exactly. So yeah, that'll be it for keeping score. I mean, that'll be it for sneaky starts. Spoiler alert.
Freudian slip there. Yeah, that's our next segment, keeping score.
If you're new to Keeping Score, this segment is basically where I run through the weekly results of the players that finish top 12 of their position, RB1s or wide receiver ones, and point out the guys who ADP was a starter at their position. So they were drafted as, like, you know, RB2 or RB1 or wide receiver 1 through 2, top 24, basically, to sort of pinpoint that, you know, first of all, fantasy is a weekly game, so these season-long numbers don't really reflect how much these players helped you. And second of all, this idea of, well, your first-round pick is a bust, doesn't matter that much if the guy you took in the fifth round, who you did draft as a starter, has been, you know, killing it if you drafted DeMarco Murray. It doesn't really matter if your first-round pick is a bust. So it's basically, did the guys you take as starters, are they working out at each position? Just to sort of keep score of running backs versus wide receivers. This is...
Oh, is that why it's called Keeping Score?
Yeah.
Oh, I just figured it out.
Boom.
Ooh.
Welcome to the train of thought, choo-choo, all aboard. So let's get into some running backs. So these are the results from week 5 as we enter week 6. Boom.
Well, blam.
Running back numbers up on your screen.
Tasty. Look at the end. Look at the end of that list.
Look at that. Look at
the saucy running backs.
The saucy running backs in the second half of that list. Yeah, you know, this week, 7 running backs that were drafted as starters finished as RB1s. 6 of which were drafted as RB1s. So this is a very successful week for the early round running backs. To quickly run through the list, David Johnson finished first. He was taken as the RB2 in the first round, followed by Ezekiel Elliott, number 2, who was taken as the RB4 also in the first round. So, I mean, those two have
killing
kind of been
it,
all
yeah.
over this list all year. They've been the two best guys to have taken in the first round, apparently. And then you get a bunch of late-round guys in a row. Tevin Coleman, 13th round. Jordan Howard, 21st round. Cameron Artis Payne, 20th round. Theo Riddick, 11th round. So none of these guys you took as starters, you probably were using them this week, but, you know, if you didn't draft them that way. Then we get Devonta Freeman popping in at number 7, taken as the RB7 in the second round. I thought Devonta Freeman was going to be a bust this year, so it's been like a pleasant surprise to see him putting up like RB1 numbers most weeks.
He is. He's an RB1 right now.
He is an
RB1. Through 5 weeks of the season, yeah.
Yeah. So moving on next, we have Carlos Hyde at number 8, the RB... 14 is where he was drafted in the third round. So not as an RB1, but still as a starter. And then Matt Asiata, undrafted free agent. You know, you probably weren't starting him after what happened the week before, so he was just there to tilt McKinnon owners. And then we get the 3 in a row. LeSean McCoy, taken as the RB12 in the third round. Le'Veon Bell at 11, taken as the RB6 in the second round. And then Todd Gurley squeaking in as an RB1 for now 2 out of 5 weeks. But taken as the RB1, so not quite what you hope for Todd Gurley, but he's helped you a couple weeks now at least. That hasn't been a total disaster. He didn't get
this
hurt.
This is the week. This is a week for Todd Gurley, though.
You hope
he's
so,
gonna
man.
Explode if it, like a diaper.
If he doesn't, then just drop him, is basically what we're saying.
Don't even trade him for his name. Just drop him.
No, because his name will be trash by then. So, yeah, 7 of the 12 running backs. That is, you know, just over 50%. And the running back pool is a little bit smaller than 24 due to, you know, injuries and bye weeks. So really, it's closer to 60%, you know. So I think it's about 2/3 of the running backs that were drafted as starters finished in the top 12.
Yeah,
so
it's fantastic.
That's a good week for running backs. It's nice to see. Then we move on to wide receiver. Results are not quite as promising. I messed up on the colors for this. This is very embarrassing. I accidentally highlighted Sammy Coates, who's not taken as a wide receiver 1. I meant to highlight Mike Evans. So it's still 4. Four wide receivers were taken as starters that finished as wide receiver 1s, but ignore that Sammy Coates is highlighted. Oh, my goodness. So number 1 was Sammy Coates, drafted as a wide receiver 71 in the 18th round. Not a starter. Not ever going to happen again. And then number 2, T.Y. Hilton, taken as a wide receiver 16 in the third round, starter. Amari Cooper was the wide receiver 3, taken just outside of the wide receiver 1 range as the wide receiver 13 in the third round. So, you know, those 2 and 3 are pretty good. And then we kind of get the run here that isn't so good for around wide receivers. We get Larry Fitzgerald taken as a wide receiver 28 in the end of the 5th. That's kind of borderline, but still not a starter.
Yeah.
Brandon LaFell was number wide receiver 5, taken as wide receiver 82. You weren't starting Brandon LaFell, just be honest. Then a bunch of guys, Adam Thielen, undrafted free agent. Tyrell Williams, you might have been starting just because of, you know, what his position is, but undrafted. Cameron Meredith, undrafted. And then Brandon Marshall at the wide receiver 9 comes in. He was drafted as the wide receiver 9. So that's, yeah, that's kind of cool.
Dead on, yeah.
Dead on. He's giving you exact value of what you drafted him as. The number 10, Jeremy Curley, undrafted. 11, we get Mike Evans, drafted as the wide receiver 11. That's crazy.
Woo-hoo.
So Evans and Marshall is right on their value. So that's, and then Devonta Adams, number 12, not, you know, taking the 19th round. He doesn't mean anything. So that's only four wide receivers of the 12 were guys drafted as starters. You know, that's approximately a third. The pool is a little bit smaller than the 24, so it ends up being, you know, closer to 40%. But still, this is, you know, the percentage of wide receivers that finished, that were drafted as starters that finished as wide receiver ones is smaller than the same for running backs. And this is, it's been this trend for a few weeks now. This is 3 weeks in a row of this happening. It was kind of an even split the first couple weeks, and it's just kind of slowly been the running backs distancing themselves.
What's the score up to this point?
So the score up to this point, as we add it together week by week, is 30 for the running back, 22 for the wide receiver.
Dominant performance.
Yeah, that's 8 more, or an average of 1 point something a week, you know, close to 2 a week.
Although it's still a one-possession game. With an 8-point separation, you know.
It is,
The wide receivers can punch it in, go for the 2-point conversion, and tie up this bad boy.
Yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen.
That's exactly what's going to happen. I mean, if we look at the top 12 through 5 weeks, just to kind of see how things have fallen season-long as well.
Yeah.
We have, for the wide receivers, Antonio Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he fits that mold. Marvin Jones is the wide receiver, too. He would be outside of that range. Julio Jones, okay. Mike Evans, yep.
Yep.
T.Y. Hilton, yep. Michael Crabtree is a 6th, wide receiver 6. Ooh. He was not drafted to be a starter.
Yep.
Larry Fitzgerald is a wide receiver 7. He was not drafted to be a starter. A.J. Green, okay. He was drafted to be a starter. Demaryius Thomas, I think he fits into the starter mold.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what his ADP finished as, though, because he was kind of fluctuating all over the place.
I mean, I can look that up really quick here. ADP. He was probably as a starter. Let's see.
Yeah, I think he was drafted as a starter, but I know he slipped to like the 4th.
Yeah, he was wide receiver 17. Yeah, and
yeah, okay.
So he was sliding.
He's definitely drafted to be a starter. Then Amari Cooper, drafted to be a starter. Then the last two, Emmanuel Sanders and Kelvin Benjamin.
Kelvin was.
So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, it looks like 8 wide receivers that were drafted to be starters through 5 weeks have finished as wide receiver ones.
Mm-hmm.
That's Antonio Brown, Julio Jones, Mike Evans, T.Y. Hilton, A.J. Green, Demaryius Thomas, Amari Cooper, and Kelvin Benjamin. If we go to the running backs, the top 12 running backs through 5 weeks, we have David Johnson, number 1, was obviously drafted to be a starter. DeMarco Murray, number 2, was drafted to be a starter. Ezekiel Elliott, drafted in the top 5. So, yeah, he was drafted to be a starter. Carlos Hyde was drafted to be a starter.
Mm-hmm.
I think Melvin Gordon just slipped into that range. He's number 5.
Yeah.
Was drafted to be a starter. LeSean McCoy was definitely drafted to be a starter. So, 6 for 6 so far.
Mm-hmm.
Tevin Coleman, here we go. Here's one that was not drafted to be a starter. He snuck in there. Devonta Freeman was drafted to be a starter. He comes in at number 8. Then we get LeGarrette Blount at number 9, was not drafted to be a starter. Isaiah Crowell at number 10 was not drafted to be a starter. C.J. Anderson.
Boom. He was.
11 was drafted to be a starter. And Matt Forte rounds out the top 12, who was also drafted to be a starter. So you have 9 running backs that were drafted to be a starters, finishing through 5 weeks in the top 12. So relatively close through 5 weeks, but if you're breaking it down week by week, then the running backs are ahead. They're even ahead through 5 weeks and just looking at the top 12, basically.
That's why
even
though it's one. Using season-long numbers for this is deceptive because it looks like, it's basically even, but on a weekly basis, it hasn't been, actually. There's the running backs just edge them out a little bit each week, and that adds up over the course of a season.
But, I mean, if you just look at the names at the top of the running back list, I think you really it. I mean, it's been 5 weeks, so we don't want to get ahead of ourselves. But it just goes to show that the RB apocalypse of last season was kind of an anomaly, because really, I mean, the top six: David Johnson, DeMarco Murray, Ezekiel Elliott, Carlos Hyde, Melvin Gordon, LeSean McCoy. Those guys were all drafted to be starters. They were drafted high. It's supposed to be, you know, a position that suffers a lot of injuries, you know, the fragility of the running back. And so far, it hasn't really worked out that way. Running back has been really solid through 5 weeks this season.
It's been a good season so far for running backs. At least, you know, this is standard scoring in PPR. I'm sure it would look pretty different. But, you know, that was kind of one of the narratives for zero RB was that, oh, but it works in standard too. And we're kind of seeing it doesn't give you any advantage. In fact, it's giving you a little bit of a disadvantage. You know, the probability of you hitting on one of these, you know, hitting on one of these running backs is smaller if you went zero RB. And that early wide receiver pool isn't helping you as much. The kind of buzz about the early wide receivers that are busting is just so quiet, you know? Like, Odell Beckham gets some attention, but he's not getting treated like, you know, Todd Gurley, who's getting treated like a pariah, you know, for what's happening.
Yeah, definitely. I haven't seen anything really on Odell other than, like, yo, he'll turn it around. But there's no faith in Todd Gurley turning it around. It's a completely different narrative. And you could say the same thing about New York's offense. Their offense has looked anemic. Eli Manning has not looked good. So, I mean, you have to be a little bit concerned as an Odell Beckham owner, just like you have to be concerned if you're a Todd Gurley owner because of the situation they're in right now. But, I mean, if you went David Johnson, Ezekiel Elliott in the first round, you're happy.
Yeah.
Le'Veon Bell's only played two games, but he's been an RB1 in both of the games that he's played.
And that's without any touchdowns either.
That's without any touchdowns. He is just... I mean, he's looked like the Lev Bell of old. So it's only a matter of time before he ends up in the top 12 list. I mean, let's see where he's at right now. He is the RB30 right now. But if you go by average, he is averaging, let's see here, 16 points a game. He is number 4. If you're going by fantasy points per game, then this whole list looks a little bit different. You have Le'Veon Bell right up next to Ezekiel Elliott and DeMarco Murray and David Johnson. He's right in that conversation, and I think he will continue to be in that conversation for the rest of the year. Who knows with Jamaal Charles? He's another name that has yet to make an impact because he's been out.
Yeah.
But this week we're going to see maybe the return of JC.
The matchup is there, and historically he's kind
of JC.
Yeah, historically he shredded the Raiders too, so this could be, you know, this breakout week for him. Who knows?
Yeah, but then we're getting this coach speak stuff again, which is so hard to really read into, where they're like, oh, we'll sprinkle him in every once in a while. You know,
I think it means nothing because the Chiefs have no advantage in saying, this is how we're going to use Jamaal Charles this week. Like, it helps them to be cryptic. Because then the Raiders just have to plan for it as if, all right, I guess we're going to see, you know, who knows how much of Jamaal we're going to see. So they have to plan for him and Spencer Ware instead of being like, nope, it's going to be Jamaal. And then they can be like, all right, we don't have to worry about figuring out how to stop Spencer Ware then. So it's just for a competitive edge.
Well, I mean, teams should basically give up on that anyways because there's no way to stop Spencer Ware. you can game plan for it, but it's just not going to happen.
Well,
they have to focus on the running back they can stop, and that's Jamaal Charles.
The way you stop Spencer Ware is you just go ahead and let him carry the ball and he'll fumble because that's what his play is.
Oh, yes, he has had a fumble in 3 straight games.
Yeah, it's not a little
although crazy. That one stupid pylon fumble, I'm still tilted over that
still
one.
Still tilting about that from like 3 weeks ago.
I can't believe this. It would have completely changed the outlook. I mean, he's still averaging 5.3 yards a carry, Spencer Ware, and he's averaging 120 yards a game from scrimmage. So he's putting up elite numbers still, even with all these fumbles.
We'll see. We'll see as soon as this week what happens. We'll watch.
When he outscores Jamaal Charles?
I mean, this is possible. I'm not going to say it's not going to happen. All I'm looking for this week is Jamaal looks like himself. If I see that, I don't even care if he doesn't like produce because he's like is on limited touches or whatever. If he looks like Jamaal, then like that's all you got to see to be happy.
Yeah, well, the final stat line is going to read something like this. Jamaal Charles will finish with 1 fantasy point, and Spencer Ware will finish with 1.1 fantasy points. So technically, Spencer Ware will outscore Jamaal Charles, But, I mean, the Raiders are just going to stuff them both because with their elite run defense.
Elite,
I mean,
sure.
Kansas City in trouble.
Hey, in trouble.
I mean, have you seen their defense? They're 4-1. That means their defense is doing something right.
Is it? That's what that means.
That's exactly what that means. I mean, they have a better record than Denver, who supposedly has an elite defense. So, I mean, using that logic, then their record's better, so their defense is better than Denver.
We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. All right, this has devolved into talking about the Raiders Chiefs game for some reason. So we'll go ahead and
I have no idea how that happened. I have nothing to do with that.
You have nothing to do with that. All right, so we'll wrap this up. Yeah, this has been Keeping Score. I will continue to do this every week, and if you like it, let me know so I don't feel like I'm throwing this out into the void for only my and Derek's interest.
Oh, it is interesting stuff, though.
Yeah,
it is. Definitely blast it out.
Learning is good, guys. Learning is good. Okay, we'll wrap this up. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so thanks for watching the video. Feel free to let us know if you went out and started any of these guys.
Yeah.
But thanks for your support. Comment, like, subscribe, whatever else you can do on YouTube. I think that's basically it.
That's basically it.
Share the video. Go to our Twitter. Go to our Facebook. Shameless plug. Go to public libraries
and go on the computers and just put this video on all the computers. You know.
That's a strategy right
there.
That's
a strategy. Please do that if you're one of our fans. We should get into contact with
one of those farming, like viewer farm.
Oh, view farms just to boost the
viewer farm factories in India or something. You know, we can start to pump out some money that way. So
like in Silicon Valley. I don't know if you watch that, but
yeah, that was it. That's exactly what I was thinking.
Boom, there it is. Yeah, so Silicon Valley us is basically what we're saying.
Yeah, Silicon Valley us. And I mean, there's a chance that nobody made it this far in the video, but if you did, if you are listening to this right now, go to our Twitter and tweet Richie Rich of the Green Bay Pack'ems.
That's how we'll know.
And we'll shout out to your Twitter handle next video.
Oh shit. That's worth a lot. That's valuable. We don't do that. My girlfriend has been doing all this YouTube stuff for her, and I don't even give her a shout out. So this is a big deal.
It's just your chance right now.
I gave her one before. She doesn't need another.
Okay. She doesn't. All right, Alex. We're giving you a shout out indirectly.
Thanks
for all your hard work.
Yeah. Okay. Like, comment, subscribe. We'll be back with more content.